So I'm going to be talking about the results of some work I've been doing for the past year or so to try and improve our long-term assessments of wind resources, onshore wind resources, particularly over complex terrain. What we've ended up with is a sort of hybrid approach, which includes numerical NWP output, model output, and physical downscaling combined with a statistical correction scheme, which is what I'm going to be focusing on today. So in its short life, it's already had several names. I think in the conference book it's called SVR VMM, but at the moment we're calling it empirical wind output correction. And it's based on support vector machines or support vector regression. So I'll spend a little bit of time just briefly introducing what it is and how it works, and then get on to some results and a few sanity checks that I've carried out just to verify what it's actually doing. So this is the setup that we're using at the Met Office to do wind resource assessment for onshore sites and offshore, in fact. I'm sure there are similar setups in other organisations, so it's a fairly well-known idea, I think. Starting with a long-term reference time series. So starting with a long-term reference time series, might be easier to use that.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So for our long-term...
Okay, sorry about that. For our long-term reference, we're using ERA interim as our starting point, and downscaling that using a Euro 4 model, local area model covering the European area. So that takes it down to 4.4 kilometre grid spacing. Obviously, that's too coarse a resolution to have any useful information for resource assessment, so another stage is required after that. And the two approaches that we've been using up until now have been either to carry on resolving down, so use a high-resolution flow solver, which in our case would be further configurations of the unified model and a nested suite, or of course you could use LES. The obvious downside to that is its cost. It's a very expensive way to go forward. But in addition to that, the accuracy is limited not just by the numerical implementation, but also the supporting data sets. So the land use data sets and orography data sets need to be there to support it. And of course, it doesn't do anything about errors that are introduced on the boundary that exist in the driving model. The other approach that we've been using a lot is the linear flow model. In our case, it's called the virtual MetMast. Similar ideas exist in other areas, the WASP particularly. And it does two things. The first is to remove known biases. So, for example, in the Euro 4 model, the influence of unresolved orography on the main flow is represented as an increased enhanced drag, which artificially reduces the low-level wind speed. And so that needs to be corrected for. The second stage is to add in the effects of the unresolved orography, so speed-up factors for height. And obviously, the accuracy there is limited by the assumptions that are necessary to linearize the equations, as well as, obviously, the errors that are introduced from the source time series. So added on to that, we've taken the virtual MetMast as a sort of starting point, and then added on to that the statistical correction. So we've tried various versions, so applying directly from ERA and from the Euro 4, but the best results come when you combine it into a hybrid system. So the numerical models provide sort of physical consistency and obviously the source time series, time variation. The VMM corrects the known biases, the known physics. And because the statistical scheme doesn't carry any assumptions about physics, doesn't know anything about the flow, it can correct for any residual biases and also processes that we may not know anything about or are just poorly represented. So I'll just explain a little bit about how it works very briefly. It's based on support vector regression, which is a type of supervised machine learning, which has some similarities to neural nets. Supervised in this case just means that there's some observations or target data against which the regression surface can be trained to. And I should say that all the back end of this comes from an open source Python toolkit from scikit-learn. So it takes two inputs, a target data array, which in this case would be the means and variances from an observed basket of sites that we have. And for each of those targets, there'll be a set of features, which are variables that we either know influence the target variables or strongly suspect that they should. And so it's designed to address exactly this sort of problem you can see on the right, where there's some obvious structure to the data. This is just a synthetic example, but there's some obvious structure to the data. But more common methods such as linear regression and even polynomial regression don't pick it out very well at all. And the way it works, in fact, is just to transform the data using a kernel transform, so it's a radial basis function kernel transform that we're using, and it then carries out linear regression in the transform space, so that when you put it back into the real space, it can capture highly nonlinear dependencies. And there are three tuning parameters. So the most important is this smoothing parameter, which regulates the trade-off between overfitting and bias, and two other slightly less important ones, which is a kernel scaling parameter and an error parameter as well, which allows you to just ignore any errors below a certain threshold. So a very sort of high-level overview of how it works. The first stage is just pre-processing, so creating the features array and the target array of observed values for each site height that we have. I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. The training stage is two-part, really. The first is feature selection, so it's identifying which of those features actually matter, have predictive skill, and which don't, and eliminating the ones that don't. And the second is finding these optimum parameters of C, gamma, and epsilon. And in reality, these are combined, actually, so it's an iterative process between the two. And then finally, once you have predictions for the mean and the variance of on a particular site, they need the source time series need to be transformed to conform to those. So the key to any kind of supervised learning technique, obviously, is having a good training data set to train it on. In our case, we've got an observational data set of 109 sites and 245 heights, covering mainland Europe, but I think between about 70%, 75% are within the UK. Typical measurement heights, 30 to 100 metres, and I think the shortest measurement period is a month, but typically I think almost all of them are at least a year long. And finally, we're splitting up the sites by orographic complexity as well, and we're using this parameter A upon S, which is an area statistic at the sort of 4 kilometre scale of the silhouettography over the surface area. So the reason for other ways of splitting it up would give similar results, but the reason for using this is that this parameter is actually used in the VMM downscaling itself, and it's one of the features that gets used as a predictor. Most of the sites are high or medium and high complexity, not so many low complexity sites, and as I might have time to show you later, it's the high complexity sites that sort of dominate the error, so they're the ones that account for most of the correction. This is the list of input features. Please don't try to read this. But so it's 35 up to 35, depending on which configurations used. And more than half of those are rejected by the feature selection, so only 15 or so of those are actually useful. So broadly speaking, they're split up into spot site characteristics, so things like airborne-ness, roughness lengths, even things like latitude and longitude and orographic height. These are all parameters that go into the VMM linear correction. Statistics of the VMM time series also go into the mean and variance. There are various sub-stages to the VMM corrections. So it accounts for several sort of intermediate time series that go in there as well. Reanalysis time series from Era Interim and Mira covering the same lengths, time periods. And then two sets of orographic statistics. So the first is that 100 meter resolution, which is the highest resolution we have available across a 10 kilometer square centered on the site. And for each of these, we're inputting the height, the gradient, magnitude, and the surface curvature, and looking at the mean and variance of both of those. And then the same again at the 4 kilometer scale, which is the orography that the Euro-4 model sees, effectively. So that's the reason for including both of those. So the feature selection is the first thing to happen during the training. There isn't really time now, unfortunately, to explain exactly how this works. But there are various off-the-shelf methods of doing this, such as principal component analysis or multivariate regression, which didn't produce very good results when I tried it. So the system that we're using at the moment effectively looks at the contribution that each of these features makes to reducing the overall mean absolute error. So it has to be done in combination with the parameter optimization through the training phase. And the output is a ranked list according to their sort of predictive capacity. And it improves, it's not strictly necessary to do this, but it improves the predictions by about 10% for all the quantities. And perhaps more importantly, it also gives you insight into which features actually matter, which are producing the errors in the model output. And then the final stage, the parameter optimization, is just a simple grid search through the space to find the best values of these parameters that minimize the mean absolute error. So the mean absolute error is calculated using leave one out cross-validation on a site-by-site basis. So for each time series, all the other time series are included except those that belong to the same site. The SVM's created using those, and then predictions made, and the mean absolute error is calculated, and that's done for every time series in the set. So the final part of it, once the predictions have been made, so we have a prediction of the mean and the variance of the time series. We then need to take the source time series and transform it to conform to those. So the most obvious thing to do is a simple linear transform. And the advantage of that is obviously you can impose the mean and the variance exactly, and it preserves all the higher order moments. So there may be some other information in the time series that is useful and you don't want to change. But in about half of the cases, that's fine. In the other half, it can produce negative wind speeds, which is obviously a problem. So in that case, you have to do an extra stage. So in this case, you take the original source time series and raise it to a power. And then impose a linear transform again on that intermediate time series to impose the mean and variance. And then as long as the minimum is greater than zero, that's where the process ends. And to prevent overshoot, because obviously the high wind speeds are more strongly affected by this, the minimum is restricted to a very small value. So it's just a way of imposing all the information available, the mean and the variance, and the a priori fact that you can't have negative wind speeds in a sort of minimal way possible. So onto a few results. I have to go through these quite quickly. Okay, very quickly. So on the left is the result from the leave one out cross-validation. So this is just an example from the mean wind speed. The first thing to note is that not all sites are improved, so about 70%, roughly 60-70% of sites are improved, but most importantly, the mean absolute error is reduced by 40% and the standard deviation by 30%, roughly. And on the right-hand side is a similar thing, so this is after the time series have been transformed, and this is a PDF of the error compared to the observations. So two points to note is that the bias is almost completely removed from that, and also the residual error is more Gaussian, which indicates that you've taken most of the structural bias out, and what's left is essentially noise. And finally, obviously, it's not just the means that matter, so looking at the whole wind speed distributions, just a couple of examples there. The one on the right, in fact, was one where the mean value is actually slightly worse than the original VMM predictions, but you could argue the shape of the distribution is a little better. So one way to measure the goodness of fit of the PDFs is by looking at the Kullback-Leibler divergence, which is measures the information missing from the predicted distribution compared to the observations. So very quickly, essentially get similar results across the whole distribution. So again, it reduces the divergence by 35%, and almost all of that, so predominantly that comes from high complexity sites. And the final thing we looked at is the scheme has no explicit constraint to make sure that so sites in either close geographical proximity or vertical proximity, looking at profiles, there's no constraint to ensure that they're consistent. So it's important to check that it doesn't do anything slightly wild when you apply it to those. So for the few sites where we've got multiple measurements over more than three heights, you can see that it does essentially follow the trend that was in the original time series. So it doesn't change it radically. And the reason for that is the physical consistencies inherited from the source models that go into it. So because the regression function varies smoothly in the feature space, because it's constrained with the smoothness parameter, and those features in turn vary smoothly in real space, that information is sort of transferred through the scheme. So just to conclude, I found that the hybrid physical statistical approach produces the best results of everything that we tried. It's particularly effective in complex terrain where nonlinear effects are important and that can't be parameterized through other means. And that's partly because the information that we supplied as features are predominantly to do with complex terrain, so orographic statistics. And finally, the physical consistency of the predictions is maintained because of including the model output in the statistical scheme. So that's all for now. Thanks for listening.